Understanding America for the Non-American Black, American Tribalism. In America, tribalism is alive and well. There are four kinds: class, ideology, region, and race. First, class. Pretty easy. Rich folk and poor folk. Second, ideology. Liberals and conservatives. They don't merely disagree on political issues. Each side believes the other is evil. Intermarriage is discouraged, and on the rare occasion that it happens, is considered remarkable. Third, region. The North and the South. The two sides fought a civil war, and tough stains from the war remain. The North looks down on the South, while the South resents the North. Finally, race. There is a ladder of racial hierarchy in America. White is always on top, specifically white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, otherwise known as WASP. And American Black is always on the bottom. And what's in the middle depends on the time and place. From chapter 17 on page 186, Americana. This is Assorted Immigrant Stories podcast. My name is Zenith Mwangahamambamalao, and I am your host. And for those of you that are stopping by for the very first time, this is a podcast about immigrant journeys, the things I and others wish we knew. We have interviews and share conversations with immigrants from diverse backgrounds and countries as they share their own immigration stories. We explore struggles, triumphs, and cultural adjustments. We discuss identity, belonging, and community. And we also highlight successes and contributions to both American society and back home, and that's wherever home might be. We also review some books that touch on the immigrant story. So don't forget to rate and review, like, share, and subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from. Excited to have not one but two incredible guests joining us to break down the critically acclaimed novel Americana. Today I have Miss Kay Wilkes, the host of the thought-provoking Pondering Thoughts podcast for curious minds. Be sure to check it out and subscribe. Don't forget to do that. We also thrilled to have Stella, a sister from another mother, joining us. And what brings these two amazing women together is a shared love of reading, traveling, sipping a good cup of coffee, and of course, Americana. All right, Miss Wilkes, can you say hello to our listeners?
Hello, everyone. Again, Kay Wilkes from Pondering Thoughts Podcast. And Zena, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm so excited to talk about the book. So thank you again.
All right. And Stella, say hello to our listeners.
Hi, I'm Stella, a friend to Zenith for many years. Thank you for having me. Love the book and happy to be here.
Okay, so before we get started, I'll just give like a brief summary of the novel, Americana by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. It's a novel, it's a love story, but it also focuses on identity, race, and immigration, especially race and immigration. It follows Ifemelu and Ombinze, the two young Nigerians who were in their youth and they fell in love. They went their separate ways because of circumstances. Ifemelu moves to the United States for school, where she grapples with racism, cultural differences. Obinze finds himself in the UK and undocumented, and eventually he goes back, she goes back, they rekindle their love, and we'll never know what happened after that. Okay, so I'll start with Ms. Wilkes. I want to know, why does this book resonate with you? Because I always get fascinated when people who are like non-African love this book, or especially from like, or even from another continent. I'm always curious, like, what resonated for you in this book?
Yeah, there are quite a few things that resonated with this book. So initially, I read this book years ago. I believe it was like shortly after the book came out. And then when he asked me to be on the show, I reread it again. So it was interesting to reread the book this time around. But I think the thing that resonated with me the most was to hear the perspective of someone who isn't from America and their perception of Americans, specifically Black Americans. Mm-hmm. And when I was reading the book, I just thought the character in the book, Ifemelu, was so spot on in terms of her observations of Black Americans, how we navigate in this world. And it was also interesting to hear a perspective of race and the difference of how she perceived race as an African in America and the way as Black Americans we perceive race. So it was just very insightful. So I think that is what really resonated with me the most, just hearing the perspective of an African in America and how they perceived America and how they perceive Black America.
Okay. And for you, Stella?
For me, this was also the second time for me reading this book. The first time I read it was, I think, in 2012. And then I just read it the other day. And to me, it felt like I was reading the book for the very first time all over again. As an immigrant, Ifemelu's story, I resonate with everything. I resonate with, you know, how hopeful she was dreaming about coming to America. And finally she gets to America and the culture shock that she goes through. And just the way the story is written and how like all the characters, you can really resonate with their thoughts and how like everything develops throughout the story. So it was just a beautiful read for me.
Yeah, so I agree with both you ladies and even in both the reasons, right? So for me as well, this is why I say this is the book that reignited even the passion to even start a podcast, perhaps. Actually, not a podcast, it was like a YouTube and then eventually a podcaster someday, because it's the first book I read that really broke down immigrant issues. And that's why I think I also fell in love with the book. And it's funny because I feel like the first time I just paid attention to that. So even though there was the love story, but it's like I paid attention to the immigrant struggles. And I was like, wow, I love this book. They break down all the struggles from beginning to end. Talk about even like in the saloon, I could imagine it, visualize it, like the conversations. I could actually imagine the people, like the people who braid the hair. Like, mm-hmm. I had faces for them of real people. And then when I listened to it the second time, just like you guys are saying, I was like, wow, did I miss that many parts that I couldn't remember? Mm-hmm. But I realized how she actually talked about race from the beginning to almost the end, right? Mm-hmm. Because even when you're in Africa, they're in Nigeria, it's like, okay, tribalism. And actually there's a page, maybe page 187, where she writes about tribalism being alive and well in America, because for us, that's what we have in Africa, a lot of tribalism. And then here you have like the racism, and she breaks it down. And I was just like, oh my God, like I had never really paid attention to that. But this time I feel like I did. And I was like, oh wow, you know, these are things we experience in our everyday life. So yeah, very interesting. So did any character or experiences in the book remind you of your own life? Like something, like if any particular that you're like, okay, this is what happened. I would like to hear that.
Go ahead, Stella.
If Emelu's story, when she first gets to America and like all the things that she had, like the culture shock, right? Like just like the next door neighbors and the conversations she's having to share with them. And so her blackness comes to light, right? So, you know, she's black. She knows that she's black. But once she gets to America, she realizes that, oh, everyone else sees me as black. And there's like, there's black Americans, and then there's like non-black Americans. And the black Americans are viewed as a certain type of person. and non-Black Americans are viewed as a certain type of person. So there's that. There's, I mean, there's so many that you go ahead, Ms. K, and I'll circle back to that.
I can't really think about any character that really resonated with me per se, but mm-hmm. I just thought that her insights in terms of being Black in America were so insightful. So even when she was talking about the whole idea of colorism mm-hmm. in the U.S., so she was making comments about how, you know, just within the Black culture, there's this hierarchy in terms of mm-hmm. like your skin complexion. And right. so she provided commentary about that. But then when she was in Nigeria, she was also providing commentary about how many people, a lot of people use bleaching creams. Mm-hmm. So all goes to show this whole concept of colorism just isn't isolated to the United States. That's something that all of us are affected with among the diaspora. And just even outside of like Africans and Black Americans, you hear about people in Latin American countries. It's the same thing. It's that same concept of colorism, people wanting to be lighter. So it's just interesting how a lot of people of color, how we're affected by different things just beyond the continent. But when she was talking about the whole light skin, dark skin thing, and then she was giving an example of when Obama was became president and how a lot of Black women were excited because Michelle Obama was like a real Black mm-hmm. woman. And I remember a lot of Black women talking about that. But one thing she said that was so spot on, and I used to hear this all the time growing up, is Black people always, not all Black people, but a lot of times Black Americans will always reference, let me stop saying always, I don't want to speak in absolutes, but mm-hmm. quite often you would hear them reference their Indian ancestry. Mm. It was always a way to somehow make a distinction between all the other Blacks. And to me, that's just a reflection of just like self-hatred, white supremacy. We know we can go on and on. But when right. she was talking about that, I said, that is so interesting to hear her perspective about that, because I hear that so often. A lot of Black Americans will always, and let me, I keep saying always, but quite often refer mm-hmm. to their Native American ancestry. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I think it's very intentional because, again, we feel a lot of times we're like at the bottom of the totem pole mm-hmm. in terms of the way we're perceived. So any way we can make any distinction between the rest of us, there's a sense of superiority. So I just thought that was a very interesting insight too. And to hear it come from someone else, I thought was very interesting.
Yeah. That's interesting. Actually, like what you said, right? Like people mentioning that as a point of like being better. But yes, colorism is real. It's there. I remember, you can imagine, I'm like what I'd call like a medium brown. But I also remember a point in my life where I thought I'm not brown enough, brown in a way that's considered beautiful. Because growing up, the lighter skinned person was the one that was considered beautiful always. If someone is light skinned, it means like even when you were modeling, like would have these modeling sessions in high school, it would be like Miss whatever the name of the school or Miss Valentine's. And the person who was had the lightest skin always won. Mm. So like even someone like who presents like you, Miss K, in my country, they would call you, and I guess the book sheds light on that, right? Like some words we realize as Africans when you come here that actually some words are hurtful or they're considered derogatory. Mm-hmm. And I think in the book she uses the word like half caste.
Mm-hmm. And I remember here, that.
Huh?
Yeah, I remember her mentioning that in the book. Yep.
Yes. And like at home, people just say like, oh yeah, she's a half caste or he's a half caste. Or they'll say, I'm a half caste. And here you can't say that. And I was like, oh, wow. So, for example, in Zambia, you'd be considered even white. You could pass as white.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's funny because I remember reading Trevor Noah's book, Born a Crime. And mm-hmm. he was talking about that, how in South Africa, he would have been considered white. But in America, we would have known that he was Black. So mm-hmm. it's just that's so interesting. Even the perception of what would be considered white and Black and the privilege that comes along with it. No, that's interesting. I never thought I could go anywhere and pass for white. So that's a whole different. That's interesting to hear that.
Uh-huh. Oh, and also, I don't know about you, Zenny, but for me coming to America, I couldn't tell apart like a Hispanic person mm-hmm. and a white person. So to me, like I saw them all. Like I got, like if a Hispanic person went to Kenya, they would just consider that person white.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so but you get here and then you realize, so there's black, there's light skinned black, and then there's Hispanic, and then white. Like you really for the first time you're like, oh, like there's all these other different like types of people.
I know. Yeah. And what's interesting, I think in the book, she even points out that she was in a class and then someone said, oh, that's Jewish. And I'm like, oh my God, people can even differentiate that.
Yes, that's another layer.
Yeah, very interesting. And truly, the sense of blackness for us only happens when you come to the United States of America. Like growing up in Zambia, like I said, yeah, there was that whole colorism thing. But you get past it, past a certain stage. But some people continue to do that. Like, you know, even that's why bleaching creams are a big business. For example, in Zambia, if you sell that, you're in business. You're going to make money. But there was no real sense of blackness, even though, like, I grew up on the Copper Belt where you had, like, maybe 30% white people. Like, even when I went to school, there was no sense of blackness. However, there was a way we always thought our lifestyle less than the white people. So meaning even foods that we ate. Let's say for instance, if you had sweet potatoes and tea, for example, you'd consider that like a poor man's meal. But we know today that you're better off eating sweet potatoes than tater tots, right? Or even a meal that consists of like dry fish or like peanuts. We think those foods are for poor people, they're for healthier people. And so therefore would make comments such as, oh, so-and-so, they eat well like white people. This is what we used to say when we're kids. And meeting well like white people meant they ate like chicken and sausage and rice and things like that. So there was no sense of blackness, but there was a sense of inferiority for some reason to whiteness.
Yes.
Which probably left over from colonialism. And I think it still exists to a certain extent. Yeah.
Yeah.
It still exists.
Wow.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's go to, for you, Miss K. But Stella, did we circle back to you? Did you have any more to add on that?
Oh, yeah. I think, yeah. So that was just my little country. Yeah. That was it.
Yeah. So, Miss K, I'm curious. So when you read the book, had you ever thought even about the immigrant experience? Or if you did the book shift your perspective on the immigrant experience?
You know, I don't think I ever really thought about the immigrant experience per se. And then I sometimes wonder if that has a lot to do with me, even though I've traveled to other places and I've studied abroad, just being in America. Sometimes I think we have such a myopic view because we have everything here. Mm-hmm. So many times people want to come here. Although things are changing and people want to go other places. But so I never thought about it. But I think after you and I had a conversation when you were on my show and then reading this book after speaking with you, I think it has really opened my mind about just kind of the different things that people are up against. But it also makes me think about how sometimes there's this idealized view of what America is in other countries. And how so many things are kind of misconstrued. And then once people get here, you kind of realize it's not everything it was chalked up to be. And how you realize how your experience is different depending upon the way you look, too. Just kind of getting back to the, you know, the race, the class and everything else. So you have this view of what America may be like. And it looks like it's all, you know, like a road full of roses, but if you look a certain way, it may be a little easier as opposed to someone else. So I think it did kind of open my eyes to a large degree, because I don't think I really ever thought about it, because I never had to, because I never knew anyone who immigrated or was an immigrant. But then reading this book and hearing this perspective, I was like, wow, you just kind of think about the different things people are up against. But it also makes me admire people's tenacity too.
Right. Okay. And Stella, that question doesn't apply. And it's unfortunate. We're supposed to have a third person. Would have loved to have a male perspective. Anthony Mendez was supposed to join us, but maybe we will record a short clip, which we'll add on the back end. It would have been nice to hear his perspective on that. So I hear you, Miss Kay. I think it was the same thing for me, like rereading the first time, I was just so focused on the immigrant story. Whereas when I listened to it now, I was seeing all those race issues, you know, issues that maybe in the past we might have thought don't affect us. But when you sit with it and you learn your history, you realize, well, all the issues affect all of us, you know,
Could also have to do with us living here longer. Like the longer you live here,
right,
the more you're like more conscious about all the other issues. Like it's more apparent to you than when you first get here. Yeah,
that is true.
Yeah.
So I have a quick question. Can I ask a question real quick?
Sure.
So from your perspective, so it's interesting. So Stella, you're from Kenya.
Kenya.
And,
uh-huh.
Yep. And Zanthana from Zambia.
Zambia.
So when I was reading the book, one thing that the main character talked about was, we use the term code switching, like trying to switch and becoming Americanized to fit in. Did you all experience that as well? And if so, did your experience kind of parallel what she was dealing with in the book?
Yeah. Did we or do we? I feel like I'm still dealing with that. I still code switch. Yes. Absolutely. When I'm around like my African friends, there's a certain way that I'll speak. And like say if I'm at work, there's a certain way that I'll speak. And it's not that I'm trying to be like more American. It's more that because of the accent, you get so tired of having to repeat yourself, like if you speak in your original accent. So you're forced to like speak in a certain way in certain spaces.
Interesting. What about that? Yes. Like when I was listening to it on the audio, because I was rereading the book and I was listening to it via the audio. So it was interesting because the lady who was doing the voiceover, when she was imitating the American accent, it sounded so exaggerated. And I was like, is that how we sound?
It's not only the Americans. No, it's also the Africans. Her accents were... They were very, off. Very deep. They were off.
They were really off. I was like, it was a combination. Someone from the South, someone from New York, someone from Australia. It was like all over the accents when she was when she was giving voice to those that were from like Nigeria or Africa. Those to me, they sounded authentic. But then again, I don't know what an authentic African accent sounds like. But when she was imitating like. What was it, DK, Ifemelo's nephew or cousin? Mm-hmm. I was like, that is not what he would sound like. It was like, it was so androgynous, it was real nasally. I was like, is that what we sound like? It was super nasal. So I was curious. I was like, do you guys agree with that? Like, do we sound like this? It was like all over the place. I was like, do we really sound that bad? So anyway, no. I thought that was funny. So I was just curious if that's how we come across to you all. It was kind of exaggerated, but I was just curious.
Yeah. So I think the only accents I think she got right were the British ones.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's the only one I said, okay, she got that down pat. Everything else, no. It's kind of like when we watch movies here or like when you watch Wakanda Forever or Black Panther. Yeah, you're like, really? That's not how we sound.
It was completely off. Especially the African accents were off, but you wouldn't tell unless you were like, maybe you are familiar with like how Africans from a certain part of the continent speak. Yeah.
So can you tell, because you're from Kenya and Zenny being from another country in Africa, can you usually tell people who are from different parts of Africa? And I am pretty much exposed in my naivety. Can you usually tell if someone's from a different part based on their accent?
Go ahead.
Okay, so for me, once you've heard people speak like for a certain period of time, you really get to know the accent, then you can tell. So there are countries I can tell, but there are certain countries I might still get confused. So like Kenya, yes. If someone is from Kenya, I can hear them. Uganda, I'll know they're from Uganda. Nigeria, it's very distinct. Mm-hmm. And then there's Cameroon. But once it gets Burkina Faso, Togo, once it gets over there, I can't differentiate. I will just know it's somewhere West Africa, but I will not know. But like Liberia, I might be able to pick up. So people that I've heard speak for a while, I'm like, okay, yeah, this accent is from this region and it's from this country. And there's still countries I still don't understand. And it's just in the same way here, the way you guys know, oh, that's a New York accent. I can't tell New York from New York from, I don't know, Montana or whatever. You know, it's like, I can't tell.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah, it's the same for me as well. Like certain countries, I can kind of tell that this person is from this country. But of course, like Zenit said, I can't speak for all the countries in Africa, but for the most part, I can sort of tell that this person is from East, West, Central, South, like that. Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that.
But in the book, the lady who did the recording, she had us all mixed up. Like she was,
did.
Yeah, the people from East Africa sounded like they were like from Senegal or.
Yeah. She did a Liberian accent at some point. I was like, ah.
Yeah. even the Kenyan accent, being from Kenya, I was like,
yes.
Oh Lord, this is not it.
Yes, that was funny when she met that Kenyan student, right, in college.
Yes,
I was like, that's not how they sound.
Oh, so you all listen to the audio too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
That makes me feel good. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
Because I read and then listened, you know.
Yeah.
Me too.
And
yeah.
About the code switching for me too. Yes, I still do that. Like it's just the way it is. If I'm talking to my brother, I naturally just speak a certain kind of way of like I'm in Zambia. I remember one person even joked, they're like, oh, wow, your accent hasn't changed. There's a certain way I speak, which is just very Zambian, you will know. But when I'm at work, same thing. When I'm talking to the co-workers, the doctors, the nurses, there's a way I speak as well, you know. And it's like the same thing you get tired of. What did you say? And I'd be like, "What? You water? You like, water?"
Yeah, you get tired of repeating yourself over and over. Yeah.
So yeah, the code switching happens all the time, and then it's like this thing, like, oh, if you're in a setting, if you've gone for an interview, there's a way you'd speak. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah, depending on the setting, if you're in the bank. You know, and you're just like, man, you know. And I remember Ifemolu one day just dropped it. But you get tired because what? Yeah, you get tired.
Yeah.
And also, mm-hmm. It's interesting you say that because I was thinking about that too. In the book, I remember she was talking about how for when she first came to America, she was encountering the same thing you two expressed. Like people were asking her to repeat herself. I think she gave an example of when she was it was like her first day at college or at the university where she was working or, you know.
Yes.
And the lady was talking like super slow.
Slow, yes. Mm-hmm. It's like they assume you're unintelligent because you have an accent.
But what I thought was beautiful is that she said at some point she just decided she was going to stop. Again, I'm using the term code switching. And she started to go back to just kind of speaking in her normal accent. It seemed mm-hmm. like she was using that pretty much as a form of like resistance to a certain degree or
mm-hmm.
not resistance, but you know what I mean? Just mm-hmm. to kind of take a stand in terms of like, I'm not going to assimilate, just kind of accept me for who I am. So I thought
Correct.
That was kind of beautiful. Like within her language, you can see how she even evolved in terms of not being completely assimilated in the American culture.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Okay. So we'll pivot a little bit and we'll come back because race is a big part of this book. So we'll definitely come back to that. But hair plays a symbolic role in the book. And do you relate to Ifemelu's experiences with hair and how it connects to identity?
Absolutely. For me, 100%. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first came to this country, I had like a relaxer in my hair. And then, you know, with over time, you know, black girls had less and less relaxers in their hair. So then there was like this whole natural hair movement. Mm-hmm. So then I stopped putting relaxers in my hair. And, you know, there's that point where you have to do like that big chop.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I did the big chop and I looked at myself in the mirror and like I felt really like not beautiful, you know? It took a whole bunch of work on myself for me to finally have like self-acceptance and to finally accept that, hey, this is my hair, and I found new ways to manage my hair, and you know, it took a lot of time. And in the book, you can see Femelu going through the same struggles as I did.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. What about you,
Miss Kay?
So for me, it's interesting because I think I may have been on the opposite end of the spectrum, in the sense that because of the texture of my hair, mm-hmm. in my community, I do not like using this term, but maybe quote unquote good hair. I do not like using that term, but I'm just going to be completely honest. So my connection with my hair may be a little different, but I always understood how it was perceived within my community in terms of the texture of hair.
Okay.
And it was interesting for me, when I was listening to that whole, like her experience in the beauty shop, she talked about, I think, did she do a big chop too in the book?
I think she did a big chop too,
but it made me think about how, just like even in the Black culture, how things have shifted in terms of way we view hair. People are a little bit more embracing and accepting of like natural hair. And it's funny because years ago, weaves were looked down upon.
Right.
In the Black community, like if you had a weave, like we would just like, guys would just kind of rag you out. They were thinking,
really?
Yes. Oh my gosh. No. Weaves, especially like in the 80s and 90s, no, weaves were like, ugh. But then things have shifted. So it's almost like you have like this one side of the spectrum where we're embracing natural hair. You can go to probably any drugstore and have hair products for Black hair or natural hair, which is beautiful. But then you have this whole other subset too, where a lot of people are into like weaves and stuff. And it's like this weird dichotomy, but at one time, no, you would be looked down upon if you would have like fake hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And even like in rap songs, like if you listen to rap songs from like the 90s and the 80s, yeah, guys were clown girls that had like weaves. But now it's like the norm.
Yeah,
like,
that's weaves, just the norm. Waves, yeah, wigs. So,
wigs. And that's funny too. That's funny too, because at one point, wigs, you didn't really meet a lot of young girls that wore wigs.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It was just like older women.
Okay.
I mean, like in your 20s, no one was wearing a wig. But now I hear a lot of young girls now wear wigs. So it's just interesting, like the whole hair thing, how it's shifted over the years, especially within the Black community. I was like, at one point,
Yeah. So I think for me, this book came out at the right time. And it was the same thing for me. I think I had a relaxer right after high school. And every time I would have my hair is very coarse. I'm like 4C, 4C all the way. And every time I would have to use a relaxer, I would have to have the cream for extra minutes than whatever is stated on the box for it to even straighten my hair. Mm-hmm. And what would usually happen is I would get these wounds, the same wounds that she described in the book. I was like, yeah, that's me. That's me. And then eventually I would get these bald spots in my head, you know? So, yeah. So then I would always have to cover it with some sort of half wig underneath. So it was one of those things like, oh, my God, I can't even take this half wig off because I'm just going to look like a chicken with, you know, parts of hair like out, buds, but like horrible. And one day I was like, why am I doing this to myself? Why? And one day I just went to the barber. I'm like, just cut my hair. We're just going all natural. I can't take these wounds anymore because it used to burn and hurt. Then I'd have wounds, then repeat the cycle. I was like, no. So, you know, I did the big chop, but it's one of those things that you're still always conscious when you walk into certain spaces. So even though I made that decision, it was, if I'm going for a job interview, should I cover this, you know, type of thing? Is it considered not professional? Is it considered shabby? But you start to see, like, over the years since 2012, with time, there's more acceptance. You see more female CEOs, either even with dreadlocks, sister locks, afros, natural hair. You're seeing it more often. But what's interesting for me was even like back home, right? Like, I remember when I went back, I was on a wedding lineup and my cousin wanted us all to wear weaves. So I did that because I needed to look like everybody else, but I took it out right after the wedding. And I went to the salon, like in my town where I grew up, and the lady straight up looked at me like, we don't wash natural hair. Like, we don't know what to do with it. And I was like, okay, show me your products. Where are your products? They showed me. I said, we're going to use this, this and that. Okay. And we did that. And even when she finished, it's like, oh, so what should I do? You know, so it's that thing. Like, it's not just here, even at home, you know, mm-hmm. it's still like the straight hair and this, all these wigs and weaves. Mm-hmm. That's what is considered more presentable looking, you know, whereas natural hair is considered like, you know, it's not presentable. So it's, it's interesting. It's a challenge, but yeah. It's like that. But for me, yes, I came to a point, and I've noticed, even at work, when you have a weave, oh, everybody will be like, oh, your hair looks good. Mm-hmm. And that wig is off, weave is off, and you come with your natural, everybody's mute. But eventually I was like, yeah, I'm walking around with my natural hair, you know, whether you think I look cute or not. Like, yeah, we're rolling with this. We're not doing any wounds around here. Yeah.
But wow. Also... it's funny how, in this country, like, with the black history that it has, there isn't, until recently, like until maybe, I'd say maybe 10, 15 years ago, there really wasn't that much information out there about black hair. Mm-hmm. Like even in, and even in the book, remember when, Kurt, goes over to visit Ifemelu and he finds all these magazines, talking about black hair, and he took offense, and she took him to like a drugstore and was showing him all these magazines in there, just depicting like, you know, white women. And then like maybe two or three that talked about like black hair. Right. So until very recently, there wasn't that much information. And even now you can tell like some of my non-black coworkers are still very curious and ask a lot of questions about like black hair. So I found that interesting that in a country where like black people have been here for so many years, mm-hmm. it's like there still isn't that much information out there about black hair. I mean, they're still curious to touch your hair. They want to know what you have in your hair. What's that called? You know, you would think that after all these years, after so many years, like, that would just be information that everybody knows. Like, you know, there's black people and this is their hair and these are their products they use. You know, you would think that way.
Right. No, that's a good point.
Yeah.
But that all goes to show that how, like, sometimes a dominant culture remains dominant. So even though, you know, we've been here for years, you know, the narrative that always predominates is usually not ours. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, the history about our hair and things like that are suppressed. So,
Yeah.
So speaking of that, like you said, you know, the dominant culture dominates, and we're going to, these next bunch of questions will be like tied to race and identity, because that was, you know, throughout the book, and that's what the blog was about as well. So how does white privilege manifest in everyday situations? You can give like an example or just what you see, something, you know, how does that manifest itself? Miss K, you can go.
Sure. Do you mean like in the book or just how I see it just in my everyday life?
Yes, like in your everyday life.
Oh, gosh. I mean, like where?
where do you begin?
Where do I start? Let's see. In terms of like the privilege, I think the biggest thing is that subconsciously, every day, without me thinking about it, I'm always aware of the fact that I'm black. Mm-hmm. Every day, all the time. So like when I go into a store and I see different people, I'm usually automatically thinking to myself, will I get the same type of service, you know, because of the way I look? Mm-hmm. You know, for example, I have, you know, a young nephew. If we're going certain places, I'm always thinking about how, you know, if like my nephew or someone's with me, how they'll be perceived just based on the color of their skin. Wonderful individuals. They're wonderful young kids. I have a younger nephew and nieces. You know, I'm always thinking about how race is going to play a part in terms of my experience in my day-to-day life. And sometimes, even when I think about traveling certain places, I'm like, oh, I may want to go here, maybe some places in the South, or if I want to take a road trip, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, what is the culture like in that particular city? Or what's the culture like in that particular part of the United States? Because a lot of places still have what they call, I think they call them like sunset towns. Like after sunset, you want to be out, because when segregation was prevalent, you know, after sunset, you may get lynched. And I think nowadays, some people are still starting to feel that way just because of the political climate in America. There's certain places you don't want to go. So I feel like I'm always thinking about it, even when it's not intentional. I just always feel that I'm Black. And I hear some people who travel abroad and go other places, they say sometimes they feel like a lightness when they go other places, because it's the first time they may have felt just like a man, period. Not a Black man, but just a man or a woman, not a Black woman. And then you come here and you can just feel it. You just know. And so that's why I just found that book interesting too. So in terms of white privilege, I think the privilege of just being free and not really having to worry about, you know, like how you're going to be perceived based on your color. Like if you get bad service, you probably just got a bad waiter. It wasn't probably because you were white. But with us, we don't know. We don't know if we got bad service because we were Black or because we just got a bad waiter. So it's always weighing on us, or it often weighs on us. So that's my perspective.
For me, I also resonate with what you just said, Ms. K. But on top of that, I also have to add the aspect of like the accent, right? So not only am I Black, but I'm Black with an accent. So just like you, every day I have to approach people and I have to think like, what are they gonna think about me? I sound different. And this is like from both Blacks and whites, like from everybody. Every day I think, oh, are they gonna think, you know, are they gonna think that I'm smart? Are they gonna think that I'm, you know, what type of a person am I? So I really just go about life, navigate life in America, just knowing at the back of my mind that they're gonna think that I'm different first, and then everything else comes secondary.
I almost feel as if it's like that thing you do, as though you're trying to say, "Oh yeah, I fit in here too." You know?
Yeah.
And I don't know how to describe it, and I want to say I don't like it. Because you know, like, oh, you, like you're saying, you're Black and then you have an accent, but you want to like prove like, yeah, but I'm smart too. You know, I belong on this table, but it's constant. It is constant. And I think she tries to highlight that in the book. Like everything you do, you must first think, oh, is it because I'm Black? And especially now with having a Black son, I'm always thinking, oh my God, you know, high school, college, jobs, what does that even look like? Because first you have to think. And people, in a very subtle way, I mean, just recently I experienced something at work where, and by recently, I mean maybe 2 or 3 days ago, where I was the resource person on the unit. So which means if I'm the resource person, it means if you have a question, you're going to ask me, right? And this young lady asked me a question and I gave her an answer, but she wasn't satisfied. So she goes in the back to text somebody who is not there. So I'm like, oh, she's taking, then I thought, oh, I needed to help out something. So I go there, then she goes, oh, you know what? I'm so sorry. I text so-and-so, and because I text them first, I'm going to do what they told me. But you see that happening all the time. And in my mind, I'm thinking, why did you even ask me in the first place? Because for me, I've sort of almost gotten over that. Like, so I actually don't care that you're not going to ask me. So like, I don't care. So if you want, you can right away text whomever you want to text. I'm the resource person here right now, but if you want to text somebody, go ahead. Like, I don't care. You know, that's where I've reached. So you can see that happening from time to time. People doubt what you say. You know, they don't believe you, and they see somebody else, then somebody else comes and says the exact same thing that you said, and somebody else who is white, okay? Then they are assured after the white person has said what you just said. And this happens at work all the time, you know? So you see it manifest like that, like every day. It's like, wow, okay.
And then the other thing sometimes too, even like being a woman. Mm-hmm. So sometimes if you just kind of take just a race out of it, being a woman, and then you have, you're a Black woman. So sometimes people doubt us because we're women too. So there's mm-hmm. so many layers to it, but it's just the fact that we always have to think in the back of our mind, is this the reason why? When some people are just jerks, you know, some people, that's just how they are, regardless of who the, you know, who right. they're interacting with. But because we've experienced it so much, it's kind of hard to kind of separate it, to kind of decide, okay, is it happening because of my race? Is it happening because of my gender? Or is that just who the person is? So right. I think, and I yeah. think, to me, I think that's kind of like a burden. It's like a weight, because mm-hmm. you want to just walk through life, you know, light. I mean, life happens, but when you always have to, when you feel like you have to constantly think about that, sometimes it can feel somewhat of a weight, depending upon how you, you know, handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you have to constantly remind yourself that you're enough.
Exactly.
Like that, my Kenyan-ness, or like your Zambian-ness, your Blackness, that you're enough. Like, you're enough.
Right. You're
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
I agree. We do have to remind ourselves. Okay. So do you have any, well, I guess we touched that on work, but how does racism show up in friendships and relationships? Miss Stella, you can go.
In friendships and in relationships, huh? In relationships, not really my personal experience, but like from talking to like girlfriends who like are in the dating scene, mm-hmm. There's a struggle there. there definitely is a struggle. Whether it's a dating app that you're meeting someone up on a dating app, and then you finally meet up with them, and maybe based off of your physical features or whatever, one reason or another, I feel like they're getting a lot of rejections. And I don't know. I don't want to also just say that it's only because of like their race, but I know that there's a struggle, you know, in the dating scene.
Yeah. All right, Ms. K, what do you have to say about that?
Let's see. I will say that the way race comes up in certain friendships, you know, I have friends of different races. Mm-hmm. And I will say that, you know, there are certain topics that for a long time I wouldn't talk to certain people about if they were non-Black,
mm-hmm.
only because I didn't feel like they could understand or relate. But with everything going on, I'm finding myself being a little bit more vocal, because I'm trying to feel out if they're an ally or not. So,
right.
You know, sometimes you just avoid certain topics, but I feel like we're in a day and age, it's like, okay, if I can't openly talk to you about race and what I'm dealing with, then, you know, I may have to reevaluate to a certain degree. So I think for a long time I would play it safe, and those certain things I wouldn't talk about. And it's still a level of comfort you feel talking to people who look like you or have a shared experience. But mm-hmm. I just feel like at one time I was probably a lot more guarded, but mm-hmm. now I'm a little bit more vocal about things. And then I can kind of feel out based on the way they respond, like where they are. And then I understand, like, some people who are not Black, you know, there's certain things they're probably hesitant to say because they don't want to be offensive. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we need to start having certain conversations, because like in this day and age, I kind of need to know like where you are, where you stand with certain things. We may not agree on everything, but fundamentally, if you do not believe in terms of equality for all people, especially people of color, then that may be a little problematic.
Yeah, I know, right? So for me, there's a part in the book where I think it was in the UK and they're having a discussion. It was Ombize and his, is it Emineka? I can't remember. And Georgina and their friends. And somebody says they're trying to break down what they think race in America is like. And they're like, oh, in America, you can have co-workers that are white and like your friends, but they'll never invite you to mm-hmm. their stuff. And I actually started to think, I'm like, okay. mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do I know white people whom I can actually just drive like, oh yeah, I'm coming to visit. But yes, obviously over time now, there are a few people you're like, okay, you know, and you start to feel like, okay, we are allies because they invite you either to their child's thing or their wedding or stuff like that. But I remember in the past, I worked somewhere where I thought I was friends with someone. And when their wedding came, we were not invited. I was like, oh, it's like that. It's like we are friends at work, but it ends there. You know, it's like outside of that, you're not involved. But I think over time you meet people. I've met people now who, you know, they're involved in your life. They know about your life. They can come to your house and what have you. So it's just very interesting there. So
I've actually remembered what I wanted to add about dating and relationships.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yes.
So in the book, you can see that Ifemelu and Kurt, the reason why they broke up was because she never really felt like herself mm-hmm. in that relationship, right? Mm-hmm. She felt like she always had to explain herself. It didn't matter what it was, whatever topic they talked about, she felt like she really couldn't just be her true self. She constantly had to explain. And I think the same happened with her relationship with Blaine, but for different reasons, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like it's the same thing that you were just saying, Miss K, with friendships, right? It's like you can't really open up yourself, and there are certain topics that you can't really just completely express yourself. Like you have to you can never feel that you're your true self. And that's
And you know, I'm glad you shared that, because, and I'm also glad that in the book she had a comparison between dating Kurt, who was, not only was he white, but he was a privileged mm-hmm. white.
Correct.
I mean, we're talking about, like, he came from money, conservative family, and then here he is dating this African woman and bringing them to the home. So even that whole socioeconomic dynamic was interesting. Then she dates Blaine, who's a Black American, but even still, with her being African and him being a Black American, even though in America they were both Black, there's still two very different lived experiences. So I don't feel like, until she came back home and she was with Obinze, that she really felt like herself again.
Correct.
So. Mm-hmm. That all goes to show, even though we're all Black, I mean, it's a very different experience. And you two may be able to speak on this too. Like your mm-hmm. lived experience as an African in America may be different than someone who's Ethiopian.
Right.
Than there's someone who's from South Africa. You know, like, you just can't put us like all in one bucket. So I'm glad I'm glad it was the comparison with her dating a privileged white guy. And I think he had like the blonde hair, blue eyes, like he had the
Yep.
And what I liked about it too, and this was so true, when she talked about when she went to some event with Kurt, and she said, I can't remember, something along the lines like, I know the women were thinking to themselves, here is this pretty much this fine, wealthy guy.
And he's with her.
With her. And think about, and not only that, the fact that she was Black.
Yes.
So if she was just some like, you know, just average looking white woman, it would probably be like, okay. But the fact that she was Black, it was almost like that was like a sucker punch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the way she was even perceiving that, I don't know if you guys picked up on that too. Mm-hmm. Kind of
absolutely.
But when she mm-hmm. said that, I was like, yep, that's probably what they were thinking.
Mm-hmm. And I would even add, no, she was not just Black, but African. Mm-hmm. Like. Right.
Natural too. Natural.
Yeah.
She was coming with it, right?
Yeah. Hair, like, yo.
I know. But he was so nice to her, though. I mean, despite their differences, I mean, he was, you know, there's some decisions that Ifemelu makes in the book that I'm just like, girl.
Exactly. Thank you, Stella. I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, girl. Like, oh my God. Get it together.
Yeah, so in fact, for me, I even felt like, this relationship she's described, for it to happen, my God, one in a million in my mind.
Yes.
Because I'm mm-hmm. like, ain't no way. A rich, wealthy, like, the age, like she said, unless maybe, I don't know, maybe an older man or something, but usually you find like someone of your own age, it just doesn't
it's happen, rare, you know? The way they have, yeah, the way they write about it in the book, that's very rare to find that type of relationship in real life.
Yeah. I was like, that's a stretch, because as Black women, you already feel like you're at the bottom. You just feel like nobody looks at you, you know? Now, let alone a rich white, I was like, that, and you're African? I'm like, that's a stretch. Okay, it happens, but one in a million. So.
But let me ask you this, because I'm always curious. I usually find that, like, a lot of Black women, when they go to, like, other countries or, like, African women, it seems like interracial relationships tend to be a little bit more common than like here in the United States. Do you all feel that way too? Like if you went like to like England or someplace that, or to another country, they'll be easier to have like an interracial relationship with someone who was white, where you could be your true authentic self then. Okay.
It is. Like I went to Australia in 2015 and actually all the, I went for a friend's wedding. We went to high school together. And I did meet another schoolmate of mine, and all of them are married to like white guys. They're like white guys in their age bracket, even professionals. You can't find that. Like that, that can't happen like that. Like 4 or 5 people? Mm-mm. No. Because I think the racial issues here are so deep rooted. Mm. Race is such at the center of everything.
Everything, even the relationship. So, yeah.
Such that you find that, yeah, here it's like, oh my God. You know, yeah, but yeah, other countries it's a bit more, you know, more acceptable.
Wow, you agree, Stella? You
kind of absolutely agree. Like I've seen even just not even people that I know personally, a lot of like people on YouTube, TikTok. You'll see that over there, like in Europe, it seems like so many of them are in interracial relationships. It seems like it looks like. It could be probably maybe easier if you're there, it's more likely that you're going to date a white man. But in America, it's a very different story. Like, I can't even, do you have any friends who are married to white people in America?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Let me think about that. I have a good friend who is, she's Black, and yeah, she's dating a white guy, but yeah, most of my close friends who are Black, they're married to someone who's Black.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it could even be where I live too. I mean, you know, different parts of the country too, sometimes you find more interracial relationships than other. But the other thing that I find interesting too, just getting back to the whole colorism, is like when I'm looking at some of these interracial relationships of like Black or African women who are marrying white men in different countries, they're not fair skinned. They're not, you know, like again, in America, just dealing with colorism, quote unquote, the standard of beauty, you have to be like a certain complexion, whatever. Like they look like their full selves. I was like, that's beautiful.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So that I find interesting too, where we all have this perception of what beauty is. And that could probably be a whole nother conversation too. So.
Yeah, you're right. I feel like here in America, when you see, and I'm talking like mostly young, like if the couple is like, both of them are young, you'll probably see like, if it's a white guy and a Black woman, she'll probably be like, maybe fair skinned or like ambiguous. Like you can't really tell like what race she is. Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It being like the opposite, even as a Black American, I'm shocked because I know how what the mindset is here.
So when I
see a woman who was like just natural, she looked a certain way. That's why the whole Barack Obama, Michelle Obama conversation in the book was so pronounced, because I heard a lot of Black women, especially Black women who may look more like Michelle Obama, who was like, you know, he's dating a sister. But I was like, who's to say that the lady who is the Black woman who's light skinned is not his sister, but again, it's because of the way we've been trained in terms of what's beautiful. And I think pretty much what they're saying is like, yes, you can look a certain way and still be beautiful just because the way it's been ingrained in our head. So,
It's kind of like when I hear like, and I get like, you know what you're saying, you know how like, oh, they say like athletes or when people become black men become very successful, it's like they only date light skinned women. I mean, they're like, but like you're saying, like, well, they're still sisters, right? So it's like, okay, they're still staying, but then there's this other thing where it's like, okay, they just apparently, the, you know, I think one guy was caught even on video saying, oh, cheers to light skinned babies, right? As though to say, if you're below a certain color, you're not beautiful. Then it's like, well, okay, you feel some kind of way like, well, is everybody selling out? But they're not really selling out because they're really with sisters, but just a certain color that they prefer once they're very successful.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Have you all heard of like the paper, the brown paper
bag test?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we'll start winding down, but before we do that, I do want to touch up on something, Ms. Kay, you mentioned about the experiences. We do see in the book Laura, who was the sister to Kim, who'd hired Ifemelu as a baby sister. There's a certain way she felt about Ifemelu. You know, the kind of people we meet who are quick to tell us how, oh, they're doing this charity, and are you walking around with animals, and you know, just thinking like we're poor when we come here. And which is not true. But I remember there's a time she was telling Ifemelu that she was in a certain class with a certain African, and that African didn't get along with another African-American because she felt like that African didn't have issues. Like, you know, she was trying to say as though Black Americans have issues. But I liked what Ifemelu's response was. She was like, well, maybe while the Black American's father was in jail, the African's parent was like a minister traveling to some place, right? So, of course, their experiences are different. But I like the answer that she gave, that the lived experiences might be different. So, because there's a tendency to sort of wanting to differentiate, like, oh, maybe this group of Black people is better than this, you know, group of Black people, which is absolutely not true, you know, like there's no one group that's better than the other. And so I thought, I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah, I remember that. But I also remember, I think it goes back to the same thing we talked about earlier, that we are all grouped into one group as Black people, but we are very different. Like an African's experience is very different from like an African American's experience, which even goes to show, like in the book, when Blaine gets disappointed when Ifemelu doesn't remember when, I think it was like a security guy at the library, something happened and they were gonna demonstrate, and Ifemelu chose to go to lunch with with her friends.
Right.
And you know, honestly, reading the book as an immigrant, I was like, I mean, yeah, I wasn't so mad at her for making that decision. No, I really wasn't. I mean, there's, I think Africans also, one, especially you, okay, so for Africans, once you get here, a lot of us are not aware of like the African American struggle. It takes time. And you have to also be curious and willing to learn these things. Yeah? Right. It takes time for you to really realize that, hey, there's a reason why this is this way. You know, there's a reason why there's a disparity here. There's a reason why they are having all these socioeconomic struggles, you know. So there are certain things that may happen and you're just like, oh, your decision might not be what like a Black American a black American's decision. I don't know if I'm making myself clear.
No, I get it.
And I hear what you're saying, Stella. I feel like we should all be curious, because I feel like we come to this country on the backs of Black Americans who've been here for so many years. And it's the reason why we're even here. But yes, I feel like we are so disconnected to the plight of Black Americans. But I feel like we should be, like, we should be offended, you know, when something happens, because we're then having children who will be having children who will be Black American.
It's true. They're not going to make any difference. They're not going to say that this is Black African and this is Black. We, in other cultures' eyes, we are all one.
Correct.
Yeah.
We are all black. So then, I feel like there's an effort. Well, let me not say there's an effort. It's like the division is there and it doesn't help all of us.
This is true.
Yeah.
This is true.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't help all of us. I mean, you know, we've been in spaces, Stella, where you know that it took banding with other African Black American sisters for us to make something move, you know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. On our own, it didn't move. But when we banded, then we moved.
Yeah.
So I think we should cry for each other's struggles because, you know, it's ours. It's for all of us. But yes, many people come. They just like, there's a feeling of, that's not my fight, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not here for that. So, but that's why I like what Ifemelu told Laura, because she, you know, she stopped that and she's saying,
Yeah.
What we ain't gonna do is, you know? So what do you have to say, Ms. Kay, about that?
In terms of the, kind of like the perception of like Africans when they...
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I do remember that section. I do remember that that part of the book. And I'm trying to think of what my initial thoughts were as it related to that. Let me ponder on that a little bit and I'll come back to that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. And so, and for you, like when you encounter like Africans, how has that been? Like, or in the past, I feel like now things have gotten better actually. But in the past, do you remember where they were like, okay, it was like divided. There's Africans over there and there's African Black Americans over here.
You know, it's interesting because I don't think I really started meeting more Africans until college.
Okay.
So prior to that, and I think by that point, my awareness was a little, I had like more of a global awareness.
Okay.
In terms of my interaction, I think that personally, I was a little bit more curious because mm-hmm. I think like in high school, there was like this whole movement of like hip hop music called conscious, like mm-hmm. conscious rap, when people were talking about like going back to Africa, people were trying to take on, you know, African names, you know, everyone was a queen. They wanted to go back to Nubia. It was like this whole movement. So I think in high school, I was becoming a little bit more aware and conscious and more of appreciation for like the continent. So by the time I went to college and I started meeting more Africans from Africa, mm-hmm. I had a more curious, open perception. I think there was a level of like reverence and admiration to a certain degree.
Okay.
Just for the fact, yeah, of where they were from. Uh-huh.
Okay. Anyway, so before we do our final thought, oh, well, you know what? Let's talk about the return. So Ifemelu returns to Nigeria after so many years. What's your interpretation of her decision, Stella?
Personally, I feel like she went back because it was easier for her to go back because her family was back home, which is usually the case for a lot of immigrants who return home. Right. It's because they still have their families back there. And I don't know. I feel like that's usually the reason why most immigrants return home. Those whose families are here or like they really don't have too many people to go back to return to usually end up staying. Right. Or yeah. So I feel like that's why she went back home, is because her parents were there, her family was there.
And her obinze.
And her obinze.
Whole another podcast about
that
relationship dynamic.
What did you think about the family going back and the ending actually?
So in terms of her going back, I think for her, I feel like when she was in America, and I think this was reflected in her blog, she was always the observer. Mm-hmm. So not really like an active participant, but always an observer. And I think that going back to Nigeria, I think she felt home. Like she mm-hmm. could, I mean, I think she's naturally like an, what do you call it? A person that, you know, observes in general. But I think like once she went back to Nigeria, I think she felt like she could kind of take off that cap a little bit. I don't think she ever really felt at home. It was all these dynamics with like race. I even think like at the end of the book, Kurt asked her, when she reached out to Kurt, he asked her like, are you still blogging about race? And she said something about along the lines of like in Nigeria, you know, race is not an issue, but that's not even a concept here in Nigeria. So I think she felt like she could just kind of put off that observe her hat and just be to a certain degree, just kind of go in her natural flow.
Right.
In terms of the ending, I have a lot of different perspectives about she and Obenze kind of getting back together, because I thought it was interesting throughout the book. It seemed like it was very common among her group for women to date married men.
Okay.
So him leaving his wife and them getting back together at the end, I thought was interesting, but I felt like, again, I felt like she came home. That was her home. I think that was her safe space. So just come back to Nigeria, I felt like she could just be, and then being with him, I felt like she could just be too.
Yeah. So. Stella, what do you think about the ending?
I felt like that's the only one part that I felt like Kosi's character should have been developed a little more. So we needed to get to know her a little more than just from Obinze's eyes. I felt like we needed to know her as a woman. Because I just felt like, you know, she really did no wrong. The only wrong she did was she married the wrong man. Like, yeah. Obinze should never have married her.
Correct.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. It's one of those very difficult things, right? Because, you know, when you think of all, like, from the moral perspective,
Okay.
But then again, when I think, I'm like, okay, but Efemelu and Obinze were sort of always in love. They sort of, they're each other's home, like Miske is saying. But yes, I think it was unfair for him to marry someone he knew from the, because you can see, like, from the beginning, there was always, he always felt some kind of way, right? Like, even when she was talking to the maid, remember there was the maid who had a bag, and the maid said her previous employer's husband had molested her, and she told her to get the hell out. Like, he didn't like that. So we already see her like that. But, you know, he still went on with her, even though she was a bit manipulative with getting married to him. He knew that he didn't like it, but he still married her. So... yeah, maybe it was he was unfair to her, marry her, and then, that was a bit difficult. But, you know, I was happy that he got back with Efemelu. Yeah. So, and to your point, Ms. K, about, so, yes, I think it's, how do I put this? Okay, so my tribe actually practices polygamy. So you are allowed to have more than one wife. As people have moved into the cities, you find that that's less and less. But in the village, you will still find, you know, people who marry more than one wife. But as you get into the city, you find laws that say, well, you can only have one wife. So then what happens is, like, okay, somebody has one wife and they might have, you know, a string of girlfriends who would otherwise just be wife number 2, 3, 4, and 5 if they're in a different area. So, I don't know. I know people will come for me for that. But yeah. But you do find that it's not something that's welcoming or condoned. You know, people obviously don't like it because you have the wife at home who's like, you know, maybe miserable because of that. And she may know what's going on. Just like we found out, I think, Kosi knew for a while, right? That,
yes.
That had been going on and she was trying to make peace. So it's like, I don't know. And another thing that got my attention, I think there was the part where, we didn't mention, anyway, you know what? I know there's so many things we can touch on in this book, and I guess we can't cover everything in the interest of time. When we think of, because Auntie Uju was the same thing. Remember, she was seeing that general?
Yes, exactly.
We didn't talk about that, because when you think of DK and his identity and him trying to kill him, you know, so much in there. Them moving to a small town, no black people. But anyway, Auntie Uju was a similar situation, and sometimes it's economics, and so you have people who have a lot of money, and you have a lot of people looking for money, and it's not very good situations, especially when people can't find jobs. When people can't find opportunities. So sometimes you find those kinds of situations just all over the place. Yeah.
But even one of Ifemelu's friend, the friend that she stayed with when she first came back to Nigeria, it was a similar situation. She was dating a guy who was in another relationship. So it was almost like you were hearing this reoccurring theme mm-hmm. of women really getting emotionally attached to men who are already married. And what was very interesting is, if you remember, Ifemelu would give her aunt the business about her falling in love with this general.
Mm-hmm.
And he was married. And remember, she made a lot of comments. And here she is towards the end of the book in a similar situation. So
yeah,
it's amazing how the universe works.
I know. I know.
I just feel like Obinze should never have married until he knew for sure that Ifemelu was not no longer available. Yeah, he could have. He should have just waited.
Stella, seriously, wait.
Yes,
she wasn't responding to his emails and stuff when she was abroad. She was too iffy. If I was him, I would have kept it moving. I'm like, look, you need to get it together, because I can't be sitting around waiting for you. I mean, and love is fleeting. You can love someone 1 minute, and then it can, you know, they say sometimes love the one you're with. If you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. So I guess that's what he decided to do. So
yeah,
you think so he should have waited?
He should have either waited or moved on completely. Yeah. But it seems like it didn't matter whoever he was with. He still was going to always think about Ifemelu.
Yeah, that's true. Some people always have your heart. That's true.
No one was ever Ifemelu. So. And because he didn't know for sure that she was taken, he just knew that she was in different relationships, but she was never really married. So... I don't know.
I guess it all worked out. I guess we really don't know. We know that he came back to the house and he left his wife, but I guess that's about all we know. We don't know how the story really, really ended.
It's true. Together. Yeah, no, yeah, sure. Yeah. We don't know if they are still together today.
Exactly. Which is a good thing. We can just only imagine.
Right. Yeah.
All right, ladies. Any final thoughts? Would you recommend this book to others? And if so, why?
Absolutely, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Because it talks about everything. It talks about immigration, relationships, religious stuff.
Right. Oh my gosh, I wanted to talk about that too. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It just talks about so many. There are just so many things that you can talk about in this book. Just endless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Ms. Kate. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I mean, I would definitely recommend this book. So it looks like both of us, you know, we'd read this book years ago. We loved it. And then Zenny asked us to be on the, this podcast. And we reread it and got something different from it this time. So I mm-hmm. would definitely recommend the book. And I think it's just so layered. You can even tell from the conversation. So you can, you know, race relations, relationships, oh my gosh, there's so many things. Religion. I know, Stella, you kind of talked about a little mm-hmm. bit of that too. Mm-hmm. The immigrant experience. So
mm-hmm.
I just think it was a very well-written book. I think it was very insightful, and I think it gives you a very different perspective too.
Yeah.
It really, really does. So yeah, me too, 100%. I would recommend it, and I'm sure maybe even in a couple of years, I'll re-listen.
Mm-hmm.
If someone invites me to come and talk about that, absolutely, I would re-listen to a new book, to this book, because like you guys said, I feel like there's so many, because as I know, like, we're winding down and I'm thinking, oh my God, there was the call getting the sink with Auntie Uju, you know, Dick.
And yeah.
Like, so many characters, so many different situations, so many layers. There's so many layers. There are things we didn't even touch on today.
Yeah.
That you can talk about this book like in 100 different ways.
Because yes,
it touches on a lot of things, but obviously mainly immigration experience, love, relationships, culture, even just how secondary school was like in Africa. Then you come here mm-hmm. to college, what that was like, being in associations. And, you know, it just made me think, I'm like, oh my God, yeah, there are even two associations. You know, you have like the International Student Association, Black Union. But then you think as an immigrant, you don't even join those because you're busy working. And those mm-hmm. are important, you know, organizations mm-hmm. will start joining while you're in school. But yeah, mm-hmm. so many points, so many things. But anyway, hopefully we'll meet again for another book. Stella and I still have to meet for Behold the Dreamers. And Miss Kay, I hope you read that book and I hope you do enjoy it.
I'm going to have to put that on my to-be-read list. So I'm glad you reminded me. So yes, that looks like that may be a good one.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Oh,
it's
so definitely. You've read it? You've already
read
it?
I've read it. Yeah, that's another nice story. Okay. Like if you loved Americana, you will definitely love Behold the Dreamers.
Yeah. Okay, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. you should read and listen, because I did both as well. All right. Well, I thank you both once again. And where can people find, where can people follow you, Miss Kay?
So again, it's Kay Wilkes, mm-hmm. Pondering Thoughts Podcast. So in terms of social media, I'm primarily on Instagram at this point. So it's at Pondering Thoughts Podcast. And if you want to check out my podcast, I even have a wonderful episode with Zenny, so make sure you check that one out too. So I'm on pretty much all major platforms, so Spotify, Apple Podcast, what else, Podbean. So pretty much all your major platforms, you can check it out. So Pondering Thoughts Podcast, the podcast for curious minds. Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Don't forget to rate and review, like, share, and subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from. Until the next episode, it is goodbye.